I am sure that we all believe very much about the holy days. We believe in them. We are aware of them, and we understand why these holy days are so important and what the plan of God is as revealed through the holy days. And many of us have kept them for decades. But something happened 25 years ago. There was an unseen evil enemy. And he caused a horrific event to occur within the church that was previously thought unthinkable. It was like a virus, a spiritual virus that came in that affected the church. For the first time in the modern era, I saw the Passover services being changed into a kind of a social meeting. This was unbelievable. I couldn't believe what was happening. People were being told, "Well, you don't have to be so sober. You don't have to be quiet." And it was kind of surreal. And there were extra prayers that were added at the beginning and at the end, including the two prayers that we have normally for the bread and the wine. And so we were washing one another's feet, and the men were talking to one another. It was like, it wasn't unique. It was something out of the ordinary that I never thought I'd ever see in a Passover service. And then the days of unleavened bread were being debunked as not any value to a New Testament Christian. And so on the holy day, people would bring in leavened crackers, leavened products for meals. And when we would get together, it was surreal. I never thought that would happen. Beliefs were rattled. The church was breaking up, and many people didn't know what to do. Even a lot of ministers didn't know what to do. What do? We were never taught what to do when things like this come into the church. So it was during that time, right, during that beginning phase of changes that were coming into the church, that a member that we were very close to and her family, a member who grew up in the church and was a very good friend of ours. And I remember this distinctively because we were at her home and she asked us, or we were at maybe the church hall, but whatever, she asked us to talk to us privately. And so we sat in the car, and Sue and I were in the front and she was in the back, and she asked me a question that was really something I didn't think I'd ever hear from her. And she wanted to know, what should I do? What should I do? She said, "I know the days of unleavened bread are coming up, and I know that I should de-leaven the house. That's what I've done all these years. And I believe that, but my husband now is saying that that's not necessary. We don't have to do that anymore. We don't have to get rid of the leaven. We're New Testament Christians. That doesn't apply to us anymore. We don't need to keep these days any longer. What should I do?" And you could see the dilemma in her eyes. You could see the anxiety. You could hear the anxiety in her voice. She wanted to obey, but she had questions. Her faith was being rattled. I didn't think I'd have a question like that. And I thought, well, maybe she really knows what she should do. But she asked in all confidence, privacy. She wanted some advice. Now, I'm sure all of us at that time could have given her the right advice. But you know, all that's going on now with all the stay-at-home orders and the virus affecting the whole society, it's hard to keep your mind on things. You see what's going on. It's stressful. You see that even going out and getting food, and they're now limiting people from going into Walmart and Target, and only a certain amount can go in at a certain time, and you have to stand outside at these designated areas. And people are concerned, and you can't help but being concerned. You see the news, you see the death toll mounting, you see the economy having grave difficulties here in this country and around the world. Are the holy days still important to us? In other words, what about us still de-leavening our house before the holy days come? Should we put as much effort into doing that as we did last year and the year before? You know, those are questions that come up. And people wonder. Not wonder, they know what they should do, but sometimes it's hard to get our minds on things. So I believe there's one answer to those type of questions that come up. And that answer, I believe, is good for whatever we face now or in the future, whether in times of deception or in times of pestilence. So what is the answer? I believe that particular answer to all those type of questions can be answered by asking another question. And that question is, how does God view his holy days? How does God view them? How important are they to God? And I believe by knowing the answer to that question will give us the answer to the other questions that come along about the keeping of the holy days. And so the title of the sermon today is The Importance of the Holy Days to God. We know they are important, and that's why we're keeping them, because they are important. But what makes them so important? What makes those days so important? What makes those days so unique? Well, one of the answers, and we get a hint to that answer, is over here in Leviticus 23. So we go back to Leviticus 23. And we'll start in verse 2, a scripture we're all familiar with. We read it before the holy days and during the holy days. Verse 2, Leviticus 23, verse 2. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. Then look down to verse 4. These are the feasts of the Lord. Again, it is repeated. Holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times. And here are the appointed times. On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. To the Lord, 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. The answer is that the feasts are God's feasts. They belong to God. He is the owner of them. They are not man's feasts. They are not our feasts. The only way they are our feasts is that we are keeping them because God said they are his feasts and he wants us to keep them. So the first thing that we do have to acknowledge is that one of the reasons that these feasts are so important to God is that they are his feasts. They belong to him. And it is reiterated over here in verse 44. What is verse 44? So Moses declared to the children of Israel the feasts of the Lord. He didn't say, so Moses declared the feasts of Israel. He said, he declared to the children of Israel the feasts of the Lord. And we do this every year before all the holy days about declaring when these days will occur. And so it is interesting that God shows us they are his feasts, and he is interested in how and when we keep them. And if you were able to hear the sermon earlier today from headquarters by Mr. Burnett, he talked about detail and meaning, which was quite a good sermon. And he talked about the fact that we need to know the details, and God gives us the details. And so we've seen details right here. And that is the first of the festivals is the Passover, and it's on the 14th day. And the first day of unleavened bread is on the 15th day. Very specific. There's no wiggle room. It's 14th day and then the 15th day. Just as the Sabbath is set in stone on the seventh day, and you see that in the same chapter, verse 3, Leviticus 23, verse 3. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day, so there again is a detail. The day of the week is determined to be the Sabbath, and that's the seventh day. The seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. So not only are the holy days of God, so too is the Sabbath. And there's no question about it. There is no other holy day during the week except for these annual holy days. There is the Sabbath on the seventh day, and then these annual holy days. He's the master of the Sabbath. And so by those same measurements, as God determines the holiness of the Sabbath, so he determines the holiness of the Passover, the days of unleavened bread, and the other festivals of God. We can't mess around with these holy days. I mean, they're God's holy days. And they are holy times. So they must be kept and observed, because first and foremost, they are God's holy days and they are important to him. Now let's go back to Genesis 1 and verse 14. Genesis 1 verse 14. And here we see the creation. We know that God created all things in Genesis 1, verse 1. And then you see this, what we would call the recreation here at that time, when he did everything within 7 days, recreated what was originally the creation. But notice verse 14, Genesis 1, verse 14. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons, and for days and for years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light to the earth." And so it was. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. And he made the stars also. So there are two great lights in the heavens. We know the sun and the moon. We know, of course, that the moon is basically reflecting the light that comes from the sun. The moon is not a source of light. It reflects light. But its statement is pretty clear. Two great lights. And they are for the purpose of what? Establishing seasons for days and years. Seasons and for days and years. Now here's an interesting point to consider. The Hebrew word for seasons is moed, M-O-E-D, moed. Now the plural is moedim, moedim. And it's translated, that word translated is seasons. Now that word in the Hebrew is never used for the climactic seasons like spring, fall, or summer, or winter. It's not used for that. But it's specifically, that word is specifically used for special appointed times. Now, here's what Clark Commentary writes on this particular section, he talks about this expression, four seasons. He says, for the determination of the times on which the sacred festivals should be held, in this sense, the word frequently occurs. And it was right that at the very opening of his revelation, God should inform man that there were certain festivals which should be annually celebrated to his glory. I think that's an excellent quote, right from the very beginning. So who wrote Genesis? Who wrote Leviticus? We know that God inspired it all, but it was Moses. And Moses used the word as inspired by God in Genesis 1, verse 14, seasons, and Leviticus 23, verse 2, for the feasts. Feasts in Leviticus 23, verse 2, and seasons in Genesis 1, verse 14, are the same word. Moed. Moed. Same word. From the very beginning, we see God's involvement in setting up the sun and the moon, in particular, for the Sabbath and for his holy days. So if we are ever faced with a question or questions about keeping the holy days, let's always remember where they started from. They started from God. They belong to God first, and they are important to him. He ordained them from the very beginning, and he is in charge of them, and he commanded us to keep them. Now let's look in the Bible and see an attitude of one of the kings of Israel about when he found out what was in the law. And we begin this story over here in 2 Kings 22. So let's turn to 2 Kings 22. 2 Kings 22. This is the story of Josiah. I'm sure we've read this before, but let's look at a couple of aspects to this narrative story here. 2 Kings 22, verse 1. But Josiah was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jediah, the daughter of Adiah of Bozkath. And he did what was right in the sight of the Lord and walked in the ways of his father David. He did not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. That's encouraging, because I know in our congregations we have younger children who are, you know, a lot of them are younger than 8, some are 8, and some are a little older. But that means that 8-year-olds can obey God and should be obeying God. When we were first called in the church, I had just turned 9, and we were just, you know, my parents were teaching us these things, and we were able to understand them because our parents had been called. So that was a very great blessing. What's also interesting about Josiah, he's an 8-year-old boy, yet for the past 57 years, his grandfather Manasseh and his father Amnon were evil, and they did not obey God. For a total of 57 years before he came to the throne, all during that time, the temple was neglected. All during that time, the temple was left without any repairs. So in verse 3, it came to pass in the 18th year of King Josiah that the king sent Shaphan the scribe and the others here to the house of the Lord, saying, so he sent them to the house of the Lord. And what he wanted was for the money that was collected there to go to the repair of the temple. So this was 10 years later after he came to the throne. So we see that in verse 5, toward the end of verse 5, let them give it to those who are in the house of the Lord doing the work to repair the damages to the house, to the carpenters and builders and masons to build timber and hewn stone to repair the house. So they began to do that. So during the repairs, something was found. something that was not used for the last 57, at this time, 67 years. There was a book that was found. Verse 8. Hilkiah the high priest said to Shaphan the scribe, I have found the book of the law in the house of the Lord. And Hilkiah gave the book to Shaphan, and he read it. Let's pick up the story in verse 10. So, in verse 10, Shaphan the scribe showed the king, showed Josiah, saying, Hilkiah the priest has given me a book, and Shaphan read it before the king. And it happened when the king heard the words of the book of the law that he tore his clothes. He was moved by what he heard. He wanted to know what to do. What do I do? This is an important book. These are words from God. And the story is fascinating to read through it. And all that Josiah commanded. So let's notice then, we'll skip over to chapter 23, 2 Kings 23, and starting in verse 21. 2 Kings 23, verse 21. The king commanded all the people, saying, keep the Passover to the Lord your God, as it is written in the book of the covenant. The first holy day. So it must have been in the spring of the year when he saw this and said, we need to keep the Passover. That was his attitude. He saw the need that that had to be done. After all these years, it had not been done. Did anyone even know really how to do it? He saw it had to be done. Kind of reminds me, for many years, Mr. Armstrong did not know the meaning. Did not know why you keep the holies, but he saw they had to be kept. You keep them. And as time began to go on, he saw the meanings of the holy days and why they were important. Verse 22, such a Passover, let's keep the Passover. Such a Passover surely had never been held since the days of the judges who judged Israel, nor all the days of the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah. But in the 18th year of King Josiah, this Passover was held before the Lord in Jerusalem. So he saw the need, and it was a great Passover. Notice something else about this Passover, because you have to tie in Corinthians with Kings. Notice 2 Chronicles 35. We'll go to 2 Chronicles 35. 2 Chronicles 35, and in verse 1. Now Josiah kept a Passover to the Lord in Jerusalem, and they slaughtered the Passover lambs. When? On the 14th day of the first month. So what you find in Chronicles is a detail of when he kept the Passover. He didn't keep it just any other time of the year. He kept it on the 14th day of the first month, the exact day when he was supposed to do. Now notice something else that we don't find in Kings. Let's look at verse 17. And the children of Israel who were present kept the Passover at that time and the Feast of Unleavened Bread for 7 days. There had been no Passover kept in Israel like that since the days of Samuel the prophet, and that none of the kings of Israel had kept such a Passover as Josiah kept, with the priests and the Levites and all Judah and Israel who were present, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. So not only that, we find out another detail. They kept the days of unleavened bread. And Josiah saw that these were days ordained of God. He commanded them. And he did it with much resolve and much respect toward God. How did he do it? Not having any directions before. Well, you know where the directions were? In the book of the law. Notice verse 12. They removed the burnt offerings, and they might give themselves to the divisions of the fathers' houses and lay people to offer to the Lord, as it is written in the book of Moses, and they did so with the cattle. They went back into Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers, and saw all of those requirements and all those details, and they did it exactly as what was written in the book of the law. That was the attitude of Josiah. When we look at the words in the book, the Bible, that's got to be our attitude as well. We've got to realize that these days are so important to God, we want to keep them because they belong to, they are God's day. They are important to Him, and we want to honor God. It's a true story. Back in 1971, a teacher, this was about 49 years ago, a teacher was called into the Church of God. And he worked for a number of years. Just as an aside, this story came out in the worldwide news at that time, in the 70s. But as he kept the holy days from about 1971 to about 1974, he took off to keep the holy days. He made arrangements for substitute teachers to fill his spot. But the school district dismissed him in 1975 because of too many unexcused absences. So what he did is he first went to a commission there to deal with a school board and teacher. The commission ruled that the threat to fire him over his absences interfered with his freedom of religion. The district appealed. And the lower courts sided with the district and with the school. And they came to the conclusion that, no, he has to be there. And then when we bring in these substitute teachers, it causes substantial detrimental effects on the children's teaching. That's what the school came up with. Hence, they justified his firing. So the member appealed to the California Supreme Court, who ruled in his favor and ruled against the district and the lower courts. Went on to say that the district had many competent substitute teachers, and they did not cause any detrimental effect. And the judge went on to say the district failed to make reasonable accommodation for his desire to observe his church's holy days. Well, the district was not pleased with that. So guess what? They appealed to the United States Supreme Court. And on December 10th, 1979, after a four-year legal struggle, by a vote of 6-3 ruling, the Supreme Court denied the appeal by the district and upheld the California Supreme Court decision. At that time, the LA Times wrote on a front page article the following and said that this ruling would have national impact. And this is what they quote. This came from the LA Times at that time. The Supreme Court's action amounted to a significant legal victory for Jews, Muslims, Seventh-day Adventists, and members of the Worldwide Church of God and other religious faiths that celebrate their holidays at times when most Americans are working. Now, that man, I believe, had an attitude of faith like Josiah. He was going to keep those holy days. For 4 years, he went through a legal struggle. He could have said, it's not worth it, but he didn't. I think that's an excellent example. Not only do we have King Josiah, but we have a true story of a member who went through that. So what about us? What about us? I'm sure we've heard these scriptures a number of times, and we'll actually be reading it again on Passover. But let's look at two verses in 1 Corinthians 11. 1 Corinthians 11, actually three verses. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 26. As often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death till he comes. Therefore, whoever eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. As we heard last week, we cannot take, and even this morning on the telecast from headquarters, we can't take this evening for granted. We must be committed. We have to have the attitude of Josiah. We have to have the attitude of Paul here. The Corinthians, they didn't see the significance of the meaning of the Passover, and that it should be a meaningful ceremony that we partake of. We're realizing that we're partaking of the bread and the wine, symbolizing what Jesus Christ went through, his total sacrifice. It's more than just a meal. It's more than a social gathering. It has unique meaning to it. And even though we're going to be keeping it at home, and even though it won't be the same as we keep it when we're together, God and Jesus Christ are all going to be watching us. And they'll be helping us too. I believe they're going to be helping us. They're going to give us encouragement. They're going to give us a peace of mind. They're going to help us to realize we've done all we can to plan for this. They're going to be there to help us, and that's encouraging to know. And they want to see us, though, have a humble approach and a grateful attitude. And always remember verse 28. But let that man examine himself, and so let him eat of that bread and drink of his cup. So plan on it. Plan on taking the Passover, because that's what God and Jesus Christ wants us to do. You know, as an aside, I was thinking about this, that you know what this exercise does for all of us at home? It helps us all realize the amount of work that goes behind the scenes before we all get together for Passover. There is a lot of work and planning as to filling up the water basins and making sure the wine is poured and making sure the bread is there and making sure that everyone has a place to wash feet and that the hall situations and getting the halls lined up. And this year we had a number of halls lined up for us to be able to do this. And there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, and it helps us all realize we are now setting up the Passover in our own homes for our family and for any one or two others that are with us. But let's go back to the same book in 1 Corinthians 5, and again see the attitude of the Apostle Paul regarding the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The Feast of Unleavened Bread, verse 6. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 6. Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened, for indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast. Josiah said, we need to keep the feast. Not only the Passover, but the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and not with the old leaven or with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. We have to be a new lump, unleavened. Christ is our Passover. He sacrificed his life for us, and we see now how we are to live. We are to put out not only physical leaven, which represents the spiritual leaven of wickedness and malice, and replace those wrong attitudes with sincerity and truth. So getting back to the introductory story, here we see what we are to do about the keeping of unleavened bread and about the physical leavening, as we see the Apostle Paul telling New Testament Christians what to do. Get rid of it. The unleavened the leavening bread. Get rid of the leaven. Doing so, it helps us change our minds to wanting to follow God's ways versus our ways. No matter what we're facing in the world, no matter what we're, where our minds are, being so inundated with all that's going on, we've got to get rid of the physical leaven and get rid of the spiritual leaven as well. No excuses. No excuses. Notice what God commanded at the very first days of unleavened bread in Exodus 12. Exodus 12. Let's look at Exodus 12 now. And in verse 15, Exodus 12, verse 15. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you will remove leaven from your homes, and whoever eats leaven from the first day into the seventh day, that person will be cut off from Israel. So you get rid of the leaven before the holy day begins. And you shall observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread. On this day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you will observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. Chapter 13, let's look at verse 6. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day there shall be a feast to the Lord. There shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. And you shall teach your son in that day. You shall teach your son in that day, saying, this is done because of what the Lord did for me when I came up from Egypt. You shall therefore keep this ordinance in its season from year to year. This is from God. He told Israel to remember who it was that brought him out of Egypt. He tells them, get rid of the leaven. No matter what someone says elsewise, you got to get rid of the leaven. We have an obligation to obey God. It's important that we never forget who God is. That God is the mighty one. He is the one that brought Israel out of Egypt. He is the one who called us out of the world. He opened up our minds to his truth. He called us to the knowledge of his son, Jesus Christ, who died for our sins. He is the mighty one. He is the one whom we worship. Not a golden calf. The Israelites eventually went to worship. He wanted Israel to remember, and he said this in the context of keeping the days of unleavened bread. The other day, a lady who we knew years ago called me from Worldwide Church of God. This 25 years ago, we knew her. And we'd spent a number of hours with her in visits. And she had quit over the years keeping the Sabbath and the holy days, and remarked to me as we were talking about all that's going on in the world around us, and that this world really needs the coming kingdom of God. And I thought, should I or shouldn't I? But I did. And I asked her, I said, are you going to be keeping the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread this year? These were things that she had proven years ago. I reminded her of that. And I reminded her of seeing her every year at the Passover and the Days of Unleavened Bread and on the Sabbath. That she kept them for years, and that she had proven them to herself. And what she had done years ago, and that God would want all of us to do what he wants us to do. Because his kingdom is coming, and we all want to be part of it. She's kind of quiet. And then she basically said, I understand what you're telling me. And I don't take offense, thankfully. But I did encourage her to get back to God and to do what is right. We have to remember what God has done for us, as Israel was to remember who brought them out of Egypt. Notice 1 John 3. 1 John 3. First John 3 and in verse 1. 1 John 3 and verse 1. Let's just go through these first five verses. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us that we should be called the children of God. Therefore, the world does not know us because it did not know him. Beloved, now we are the children of God. It has not yet been revealed what we shall be. But we will know that when he is revealed, we will be like him and will be able to see him as he is. And everyone who has this hope in him purifies himself just as he is pure. Whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness. And you know, verse 5, that he was manifested to take away our sins, and in him there is no sin. God called us. Jesus Christ gave his life for us and have our sins forgiven. The Passover reminds us of what God did for us. In verse 18, my little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. The days of unleavened bread remind us how we are to live physically with the spiritual unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. And then verse 22, whatever we ask, we receive of him because we keep his commandments and do those things that are pleasing in his sight. We are doing the things that are pleasing to God. But before we conclude, I'd like to look at one other scripture. And this is over here in Ezekiel. Ezekiel 45. These days are so important to God that they will be kept during the millennium. Ezekiel 45, verse 21. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, you shall observe the Passover. A feast of 7 days of unleavened bread shall be eaten. So you see the Passover and the days of unleavened bread being eaten. And on that day, the prince shall prepare for himself and for all the people of the land a bull for a sin offering. On the 7 days of the feast, you shall prepare a burnt offering to the Lord, 7 bulls, 7 rams without blemish, daily for 7 days, and a kid of the goats daily for a sin offering. Those are the sacrifices that will take place during the days of unleavened bread in Jerusalem after Jesus Christ returns. But there's going to be a lot of detail an organization to that. Notice one verse over here in chapter 46 and in verse 9. So when the people come in to worship, they're going to have one way. It's going to be like a one-way traffic. The people of the land will come before God on the appointed feast days. Whoever enters by the north gate will worship and go by the way of the south gate. Whoever enters in by the way of the south gate shall go out by the north gate. He shall not return by the gate through which he came. They'll go through the opposite gate. So we're seeing some details even here about how the holy days are going to be kept and how people are going to come in to worship. I believe we all, and we all agree with this, we are living in unique times. We're all going to be keeping the Passover at home. We do need to make sure that the room is prepared right and that we do everything in reverence. But we also need to be very thankful that God is going to be there to help us and to encourage us. I know we want to do what is right, and we always pray that God will help us to do what is right, but be confident that God will be there and to help us out. We need to continue to watch services on the Sabbath. At least a service. We need to continue to watch services on the holy days, and thankfully we have the technology to do that. And we need to be prepared on the holy days to give a holy day offering. God is watching us, how we do, And I'm sure he's pleased with us, but we have to remain humble. This is nothing of our doing. We have to remain humble. We have an opportunity this next week in a very unique way to show God in a private way that we have the attitude of Josiah. We have the attitude of Paul. We have the attitude of Moses. We have the attitude of these faithful members that we're going to keep the holy days no matter what. And we will never forget the value that God places on these holy days. So may everyone have a very meaningful Passover and days of unleavened bread.